All right. Hello, everybody. Oh, wow. So official. Oh, my gosh. Very bright.
Wow.
All right. So I'm Stephanie Doyle. I work at CCL's office here in D.C. as our Director of National Partnerships and Outreach, and I'm really honored and excited to get to talk to our two panelists today. And I just wanted to give a little preface, just saying that we all know the Green New Deal has captured national headlines and reshaped the national dialogue around climate change. And it's helped to push both Republicans and Democrats into a new era of climate change debates, one that's finally starting to be centered around solutions to the problem at the scale that we need. We've seen how activists pushing Democrats further on the issue have resulted in every Democratic presidential candidate coming forward with ambitious climate plans that last election would have been thought of as impossible. And we've also heard Republicans starting to talk about climate change as an actual threat in multiple committee hearings on the Hill. And a lot of this is because of the work of Sunrise activists pushing the Green New Deal. And we're lucky to have two people representing two of the major groups involved in the Green New Deal strategy and policy here today with us to help explain how we got here, what happens next, and how they think about climate policy in the context of the world we live in today and the one that we want to live in the future. So I wanted to introduce both of our speakers first before we get started. So Emily Soderberg has been an active member of the Sunrise DC Hub since December of 2018. This spring, she helped co-coordinate the final stop of Sunrise's National Road to the Green New Deal tour, which culminated in Washington, DC. For the past 5 years, she's worked on a variety of projects throughout the food system with particular focus on building innovative systems to advance sustainability and fresh food access for urban communities through composting, food recovery, and urban agriculture. She's currently the assistant farm and events manager for the DC-based company Uptop Acres, which operates 8 rooftop farms throughout DC and Maryland. Originally, she's from Tucson, Arizona, and is a graduate of the University of Arizona Honors College with a BS in sustainable built environments and a minor in sustainable plant systems. She hopes to enter a graduate program in urban planning next year. And we also have Rihanna Gunright, who is the policy director for New Consensus. She was previously the policy director for Abdul Al-Sayed's 2018 gubernatorial campaign. And a 2013 Rhodes Scholar, she also worked as the policy analyst for the Detroit Health Department, the Miriam K. Chamberlain Fellow of Women and Public Policy at the Institute for Women's Policy Research, and was on the policy team for former First Lady Michelle Obama. And she also graduated magna cum laude from Yale in 2011 with majors in African American Studies and Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies. All right, so to kick it off, I was really hoping you guys could talk a bit about where Sunrise and New Consensus came from. The Green New Deal, I think, came into the spotlight, but both of you have both been doing things long before the Green New Deal was around. And in that, also, what brought you to the climate movement, if you could answer both of those. Whoever wants to kick it off.
So Sunrise was actually founded in 2017. With a group of people in their mid-20s who, you know, in college had been working in climate advocacy, I think specifically within the divestment movement. And the original kind of focus of Sunrise when it was founded was to mobilize young people in anticipation of the 2018 midterms and to try to get candidates to sign on to the No Fossil Fuel Money Pledge. So that was kind of the initial founding of Sunrise. And then after the 2018 midterms, the focus really started to shift around coalescing behind this Green New Deal agenda. And really, Sunrise kind of bolted into the national spotlight with the occupation of Nancy Pelosi's office in November, and AOC really joining and supporting that movement on her first day as a congresswoman. So that's kind of how Sunrise got started, and it's really grown exponentially faster than I think anyone would have thought in the last year and less than a year. And then I personally came into the climate space when I was in college. I really started to understand that the climate crisis is an existential threat to humanity. And I got involved in a lot of sustainability stuff on my campus, but kind of was feeling like I was mostly alone in caring about climate change so much. Like I was working, and but I wasn't feeling like there was a groundswell of young people that were working towards this, you know, existential threat for all of our lives. And it wasn't really until I first saw the Nancy Pelosi sit-in and that I was like, this is the movement that I want to be a part of. And I really jumped in and then participated. The first thing I participated in was the big action that 1,000 people showed up for in December. And then since then, I've been going full force for Sunrise.
Hello.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was on. Also, thank you all so much for earlier. No one's ever clapped for a women's studies major, ever. So that was like a nice change of pace. That was the reaction I wanted my mom to have when I changed my major. New consensus came about. New consensus is actually probably the youngest organization involved with the Green New Deal. We have been around officially since, you know, it's one of those squishy soft starts, since around August of last year in full force. But the idea behind New Consensus has been around for longer. New Consensus came out of the founding of Justice Democrats. So the founders of New Consensus were respectively one of the founders of Justice Democrats and then one of the members of the first cohort of folks that they recruited to run. So that cohort had Representative Ocasio-Cortez, and my boss decided not to run. But he did decide to join and help start New Consensus. So New Consensus was started for two reasons. The first was to really popularize and help develop a vision of what our economy can look like outside of neoliberalism. Because what we were finding was there were a lot of critiques around neoliberalism, but not a lot of models for how do you do the economy outside of that. So New Consensus was started to work on that, to popularize the vision of different economists who were working on this question. And then it was sort of later, after the initial concept, sort of grew to be a place that would take progressive ideas seriously as a policy shop. Because what we were finding was that the think tank space was not moving at the same space as the political sphere. So there was this emergence of big ideas on largely on the left, but the main calculus for a lot of think tanks in DC was still political feasibility, and that was still based on ideas from the Obama administration largely about what is and is not politically feasible. And so in the absence of that, because the Green New Deal I think got shopped around, New Consensus decided to take up the Green New Deal and to work on the policy largely to make sure that it as an idea was respected as an idea taken seriously and policy was written from that place rather than a place of like, oh, that's a great concept, let's make it responsible, whatever that means. And so that's how New Consensus got involved in the fight, and how I got involved in climate was largely through my work in Detroit. I am Black, in case you couldn't figure that out. And so when people would talk about like climate being our biggest existential threat, I was like, but I'm Black, so I have numerous existential threats. And quite frankly, climate change feels a lot less immediate than these cops, right? Or than this poverty. And so I could really struggle to connect with it. But then I was in Detroit. Detroit is sort of I wouldn't call it ground zero, but there are a lot of environmental justice issues. There was an incinerator in the middle of the city, there's refineries, and it was the first place I think I really saw up close and had to work on the intersection between the economy, equity, and the environment, and recognize the ways that, like, the environment is not far off, climate is not far off, it's here, and it was affecting the lives of the very people who I was trying to write policy for, and it just started to seem like, especially when the Green New Deal came along, too big of a spot to not pay attention to, and also had the most opportunity for actually renegotiating the power relationships in this country so that people like me are not devalued day in and day out. So, that's a light story about how I got involved in the climate.
Thank you both.
I went on a hike. I
was wondering if you guys could explain a bit about how each of your organizations relates to the Green New Deal, just to explain to everybody. I think most people know of Sunrise and New Consensus, but possibly not. So in my understanding, you know, Sunrise is sort of the activist group that's on the grassroots side of it. But I'd love to hear sort of how you both think of your roles as it relates to the process of the Green New Deal or where it's going next and sort of how that comes together.
So the role of New Consensus in the Green New Deal is really about the policy of the Green New Deal. So I think a lot of folks think of political change like you get people in the streets, you change the ideas of politicians, and then you get policy. But the fact is there's a whole industry around the creation of policy, whether you're talking about lobbyists or think tanks or, right, there's a whole input that shapes the ideas that politicians have even after folks have been in the streets. And what we were finding is that politicians might be open to activists, but when it came to policy, they were like, great, that's wonderful, we're gonna talk to the same people, right? That idea is great, but we're gonna go to the responsible stewards and we will go talk to them. But of course that meant that everything looks the same. Right? So, because you're taking these different ideas and going to the same people who have the same assumptions, who, you know, believe the world works in a particular way, and saying, okay, great, work on this. And so, New Consensus's role is essentially to stand in that gap so that the spirit of the Green New Deal remains from activism through implementation. And we do not decide to leave that last bit to whatever responsible, quote unquote, adults are in the room, but that the people who have put their bodies on the line, whether to fight for a Green New Deal or to fight against fossil fuel pollution, right, that the same people who have been fighting these fights and talking about these issues still shape the policy and aren't set aside once we basically get from the streets to the inside. So that's the role of New Consensus. Largely, and so we're kind of holding the ground in the idea space and also helping to push the Overton window through the idea space, because also just because an idea is popular doesn't mean that it will land with the sort of intellectuals who often shape our policy. So you have to move them too, and that requires sort of organizing them, starting those conversations, popularizing ideas, even within that sphere, and that is something we take seriously and work on as well.
Yeah, so like you said, Stephanie, Sunrise is the grassroots mobilization arm of really this Green New Deal movement. And Sunrise, its main goal right now is mobilizing young people to champion this issue. And I think that they have already are succeeding in bringing salience to this issue into our national conversation. But yeah, so Sunrise is all about mobilizing the youth, bringing them to the table, because it is the young people of this country now. And you know, I'm 25. I want to start a family some days, but it's kind of hard to think about starting a family when you're worried about apocalypse happening, you know, at the end of this century. So we're fighting to make sure that we have a livable future at the end of this, going forward, and making sure that the youth are coalescing.
Thank you. We could hold the applause till the very end, just maybe. You don't have to. You don't have to. Keep it coming. So I would imagine that the majority of the people in attendance today can see why the Green New Deal has resonated with so many people. But I was wondering if I could hear from you guys what you think really has been the spark that's caused it to be the thing that sort of pushed the climate movement, I think, in the top of the media, at least. Or what is it that has brought it to the attention that was sort of missing before? I don't know which of you would like to answer that.
Kind of what I was just saying, I think hearing young people speak with such moral clarity about how this issue is going to affect their lives is changed the debate, has changed the conversation around climate change. I think for the last couple decades, we've been able to keep postponing this issue because it seemed so far away. But for young people today, it doesn't feel far away because we're envisioning the rest of our lives and we're worried, you know? So I think having these young people speaking so clearly and saying, we are going to hold this space, we're going to come into places of power and demand that you listen to us because this issue matters to our lives and to our future, has shifted our national conversation.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Green New Deal is talking about systems and drawing connections. And I say that because, honestly, I think, and this is no shade to them, I think that most sort of political consultants and people who work in politics often think voters and everyday folks are far dumber than they actually are. And so they'll often tell you, like, you can't really talk beyond one issue. That's all people can handle. But the fact is that I think particularly now when folks are looking around and seeing so many things wrong, people are thinking about systems. People are coming on their own to saying these things seem to be connected. I'm not really sure how, but, like, all of this can't be going wrong because each single issue is going in a different direction. And I think that in a way that people didn't expect, because the Green New Deal is talking about environment, the economy, equity altogether, it is actually speaking to people on the level that they think about these issues too, intuitively, even if they haven't always articulated that for themselves. Because I think most of us, all of you all are here for climate, but how many of you are also concerned about healthcare? How many of you are also concerned about the fact that wages haven't risen in decades? How many of you are worried about your kids having a better future than you? Exactly. How many of you were excited to hear those things talked about all together at once? Exactly. There we go. I think in a lot of ways it is shocking people because they did not recognize or take seriously that folks were thinking about their country in these ways. But we are also thinking about our country in these ways. And so I think that resonated with folks. And so I also think that if you read the resolution is the most unabashedly progressive and justice-oriented piece of policy that, it's a resolution, but like piece of congressional legislation, resolution or not, that I've seen ever. It's like, it's a document that says everyone is entitled to clean air and clean water and we will reverse systemic injustices, right? That might not resonate with pundits or op-ed writers, but it resonates with everyday people who do recognize that. So I think that spirit comes across even when people haven't read the resolution. And I think ultimately it makes people feel seen in their problems, seen in their anxieties, and feel like someone is actually thinking about them as they're crafting solutions. And I think whenever you do that, you're gonna see resonance.
So So when, and this might be, no, I think you both can answer this one. So when you're doing outreach or you're thinking about how to get support for the Green New Deal and you think of traditional red districts or Trump areas, have you found that people are drawn to the Green New Deal regardless of party? Do you, how do you find that you talk about it, or how does Sunrise recruit in those areas? Just curious about how you think about doing outreach that way.
So, well, first I'll speak from my life personally. I grew up in a conservative family. I grew up in a conservative state. When I talk to them, when I talk to my family members about the broad ideas of the Green New Deal, they agree with me. They like the focus on jobs. They like the focus on the economy. I think having those personal interactions with people, I think, like, my family members trust me, and they know that I'm coming from a good place. They know I'm not coming from a place of politics. A lot of people are just thrown off because they think, oh, this is political or whatever. So I think having one-on-one conversations is really effective. To speak to the broader strategy, one of our strongest hubs is in Kentucky, a place where, you know, people probably aren't thinking that there's a progressive mobilization of youth that care about climate change. Like, I feel like the national conversation was kind of surprised when, you know, we had this outpouring of activity coming from these young people in Kentucky coming to DC and you know, speaking to Mitch McConnell directly. So I think we just have to, like what Rihanna was saying, like, the Green New Deal appeals to so many people because, you know, we don't live single issue lives, we live intersectional lives. We occupy a lot of different spaces all at once. And we can't write off any part of the country as not going to be more or less inclined to agree with the Green New Deal. Every part of this country is gonna be impacted by climate change in a different way. Everybody needs to be coming to the table. And yeah, that's what I have to say.
Yeah, I don't do, I mean, we're a 501c3, so we don't do a ton of outreach. But I will say, people do ask us how to communicate these policies from time to time. And my general answer is basically, where are you? What is hurting people? What are they saying is hurting them? And what part of the Green New Deal will address that hurt? That's how you talk about it, right? Because ultimately, red, Trump, whatever, they are people. And as has been covered endlessly, they are people facing economic anxiety, which I think is the name for when people are in poverty now, apparently, in the op-eds. Economic anxiety. So that's what I often will tell people, because I think it works. Now, of course, how the Green New Deal is going about solving things may be more or less popular in certain red districts. But again, I think it is, people are still interested in the ideas and still interested in what is happening. So as long as you can explain that, that is the starting point. Because I think, honestly, when you drill down and people feel like their issues will be addressed, a lot of the stuff about big government or whatnot fades away, because most times people don't have a great understanding or a great definition of that for themselves. But what they are afraid of is, okay, so it's going to be a big government that still doesn't see me, right? So again, it goes, I think, back to that part about people being seen or not seen, and how you can use the Green New Deal to help people understand how they will be taken care of and what their world will look like after fossil fuels.
Thank you. So I'm gonna try to touch on some strategy talk if you guys are up for it. So when you think about the Green New Deal and working within Congress, do you think of this as one bill, multiple bills? Does that matter at this point? How do you think through, you know, what this is going to look like over the long term?
It does not matter at this point. People love to ask this question. It's a fine question.
I have to ask.
But it doesn't make any difference. You know, it's a bit like, you know, when kids are like, will I get a pony or a motorcycle for Christmas? And you're like, you are still getting D's on your report card. I think you need to, like, focus. Maybe that's not how you talk to children, but it's how I talk to children. And that's where we are. The America is like a kid that is like getting D's and F's on climate and is like, well, if I was to study for this test, how, you know, you're just like, focus. And so I think the answer is, it depends. I think some people think it should be a big bill. Some people think it should be a small bill. I think that matters. What first we have to figure out, what is the approach that we want to use to solve these problems? And then you can figure out what legislative form it should take, whether that should be multiple bills, smaller bills. But I think we're still at the point where we need to decide what are the technical paths forward that allow for and can be built to ensure equity and redistribute power in this country so that the distribution of power is more equal? And then how do you fit that into legislation versus the other way around? So I think that's where we are.
All right, the next one I know our audience is gonna ask, so I'm gonna ask it first. How do you see or do you think about at all a carbon price fitting within a Green New Deal? Do you even, again, think we're at that point that it's even worth thinking about that? CCL advocates for carbon fee and dividend, so I know you're gonna get asked this, so just wanted to, and I'm sure there's differing opinions even within Sunrise, I would imagine, but even if you guys wanna answer it personally, whatever you.
So I will answer this personally because I can't speak on behalf of the Green New Deal on this topic. I think we're still working through it. I think carbon pricing, personally, I definitely can see how it has a role, how it is useful. I think the question that needs to be answered and remains to be answered is, how do you structure a dividend so that it actually supports people who make the least money, right? Because when you're talking about a carbon price, you're talking about raising prices in real time, right? Prices across the prices of food could go up, prices of fuel go up, et cetera. And I think there are ways you can control those price increases, right? But the fact is you are trying to dissuade people. I don't know why I'm explaining a carbon tax to you all. The point is that most conversations about dividends, people assume that it will be structured like a tax return. But if you're pushing up prices in real time and telling someone we'll return the money to you a year after, it's a problem.
All right, hey.
Or you can think that it's not a problem. I'm not saying I meant to continue. That was a bad place to pause. I was gonna say, I think that can be overcome. We know how to deliver benefits in real time. We deliver SNAP benefits every month, right? Using electronic transfer fund transfers. There are ways to get around that problem. Yes, so there are ways to get around that problem. And I think as soon as that problem is solved, I will be much more comfortable. And that's something that I'm looking into in my own time, figuring out how that can be structured, because I do think carbon pricing is a promising tool. We just have to make sure that it's used right and it's structured so that the dividend serves particularly the people who are poorest up to whenever we decide to hit the cutoff. I know there's conversations about universal versus not.
So Sunrise, I think, is more or less officially agnostic at this point. But I kind of see it as it's not gonna be an either or situation with a Green New Deal or carbon tax. It's most likely gonna be an and, is kind of where I come from it. But let's just have that be Emily's opinion, and maybe not Sunrise's official opinion, because right now Sunrise is predominantly focused on mobilization and youth and organizing and grassroots energy and being the moral voice of this climate movement.
Thank you. Where'd my other one go? Who do you think is a sector or group or industry that's untapped in the climate conversation? I had somebody bring up the insurance industry to me. Anyway, just wondering if there's people that we should be thinking about that haven't been in the conversation that seem like natural allies that just haven't been in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think insurance is definitely one. I think actually workforce training and community development folks need to be brought in more, because you're talking about a mobilization that will ideally get us to full employment, which means that there needs to be a way better way to do training in this country. Our workforce development system is broken basically from top to bottom. And we are talking about training people, a lot of people, and not a lot of time. So we need those folks thinking about these issues, helping us come up with solutions right now. Because people ask all the time, how do you pay for a Green New Deal? But the financing, the actual paying for it with money, is the easier part than paying for it with people, right? We have certain populations that have regularly double the rate of unemployment, right? We know that we have schools that are not educating all children equally. So the idea that we will be able to jump directly from that to having everyone in the jobs that we need them to be in when we need them to be in is farcical. And so we need to get really serious about, what does it mean to have a real career education system in this country? What does it mean to have access to gainful vocational training that is not done by for-profit colleges, that we don't just leave to them, right? Because that's who we leave to do a lot of our vocational training at the moment. And we need to figure out, how do you make sure that this happens at a local level without devolving everything to nonprofits that you then do not fund adequately? So, yeah.
Something that I've thought about a lot too, that's actually really in line with Rihanna, is within the Green New Deal space, we talk a lot about the next decade, right? We have this next decade to do transformational change in order to create this green economy. Something that doesn't often get talked about in conjunction with that is we're also at a precipice of profound technological change. We, in this next decade, there are estimates that all types of service industry jobs are going to be automated away. I think that there's tremendous potential synergy and overlap of all these people who, you know, are currently working at, you know, big box stores, that, you know, the big people are telling us, the big think tanks are telling us that, you know, those jobs are going to be automated away or whatever. I think that there's tremendous opportunity to be thinking about the jobs that are at risk for automation displacement, and saying, how do we get them plugged into retraining to be in the green economy? And the timelines are really overlapping, in that the automation thread is kind of the same timeline that we have left for this big mobilization for the Green New Deal.
I will also say one last group is folks involved in agriculture and forestry, right? We talk a lot about manufacturing and technology, but the fact is there's a ton of work, and a lot of the jobs potential comes on the natural resources side. When we're talking about getting back to the land, when we're talking about farming differently, and we're actually at a moment where, like, most of our farmers are aging out of their farms, but land prices are too high, right, for new farmers to come in. And you have these unemployment rates in urban centers, and you have a need for, right, more people working the land. So how do you actually connect that up in a way that is useful? And then how do you help local communities, particularly rural areas, support possibly an influx of new and diverse people coming in?
I'm going to ask one more, and then we'll open it up to you guys. So if you want to start writing your questions down, we'll have interns coming around to pick them up. I just wanted to say first, though, that I think it's really unique in this conversation that we're thinking ahead and like planning ahead, as opposed to how I've thought of climate policy in the past has been just reacting and like we need to, we're way behind, obviously. But I love that the Green New Deal also puts it as we not only need to react, but plan ahead and think forward. I just wanted to ask if you guys see your organizations playing a role in the international space at all, or if you think about how the U, or maybe it's just thinking about how the U.S. plays in the international space, just how the Green New Deal fits into a beyond the U.S.
Yeah, that's something I think about all the time, because the emissions that we continue to produce and not mitigate hurt people beyond our borders. And I think often, when we talk about the jump from like the repercussions from 1.5 degrees to 2 degrees Celsius or any of these things, a lot of those sort of preventable deaths will happen not on U.S. soil. And it bothers me and it worries me that we set those things aside in order to, sometimes it seems, create a path to decarbonization that is the most comfortable for us. And that is not fair. We cannot trade our comfort for other people's lives. Okay. That being said, I don't have a background in international policy, so I am poorly outmatched. But we are actually finding, so New Consensus runs a sort of consultative policy process where we talk to a lot of external people, a lot of groups, bring in external advisors, and so we are finding much smarter people to think through that. So I think right now it's an open question how much of a role New Consensus will play, only because we need to make sure that we are able to play, but it's definitely something that we think about and we're considering. And we're trying to figure out, even if we can't do it directly, how do we make sure that these concerns are getting addressed and getting sort of moved to the appropriate legislative channels? And how do we support action as other people are coming up with solutions if they don't fit within our scope of work?
Before you answer, Emily, I just wanted to ask, have you been contacted by people in other countries that are like, can you tell us what you're doing?
Yeah, we've been contacted by a lot of countries and we participate in those conversations. It's actually reminding me of an email from the UK that I should probably respond to. It's fine. They're going to get there faster than us. They're already working on it. So yeah, we do get actually a lot of people reaching out from other countries, and it's so exciting. And someone else on our staff deals with those.
Okay. Sunrise right now is like definitely focused domestically, but I believe within the text of the resolution, the Green New Deal resolution, it does talk about America becoming a leader in this global transition, because we know that like the atmosphere does not be like the atmosphere doesn't adhere to our man-made boundaries that we make. We know that this is a global crisis, and we also know that America like holds a lot of the historical emissions that have been emitted. So yes, absolutely. I think as we go further along in this process, there will be more opportunity to talk about more specifically how we're going to be working internationally.
Great, thank you. Taylor and Jamie, are you guys going to read me the questions?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Well, first we got a really great comment just thanking our speakers for coming to our national conference to bring the national focus on Congress and climate change. Now you can come on. One of the first questions, what are some specific aspirations for policies that you anticipate to come from the Green New Deal? If you have any.
I see what you did there. I mean, it's so funny. People ask me this a lot. And actually, if you read the resolution, a lot of the projects are pretty targeted. Like one is build a super grid. So clearly there will be a policy about how we will build a super grid, right? And so that's the best place to look for overall. But some concrete things that we are starting to develop is a program to upgrade all homes and buildings to be energy efficient. And there's open questions, and we're thinking about how do you connect that to distributed energy resources too? So how do you make sure that all homes have access to that? Other programs that we are working on are, again, policies around workforce and workforce training. And then what other things are we pulling to the fore right now too? We're also currently working on some policies around transportation and energy and power. So really starting to dig in on how do you decarbonize the energy sector? What does it mean to have a super grid? How do we want it to look? How do we want that to interplay with FERC and utilities and all of that sort of energy governance? So those are the things that we're working on like hard right now.
For me personally, I come from a, my degree is called sustainable built environment. So I come from like a land use kind of perspective, and I see like just a tremendous amount of potential, for change and reform within the agenda of the Green New Deal to really change how we build our urban centers and to really reform, land use practices. 'Cause we know that like the Camp Fire is absolutely a natural disaster, but it was man-made in addition, and climate change exacerbated that issue because we were developing so close to the fire line. In my hometown of Tucson, Arizona, we have, since 1970, Tucson's annual temperature has already risen 4 degrees, and that's largely because of the urban heat island effect and because of the way that we developed that city over time. And so I think within the policies of the Green New Deal, I would love to see some ways that we could reform the way that we build our cities, the way that we regulate our land and zone.
So Emily talked a little bit about how Sunrise is more oriented in mobilizing young people and a grassroots activism, but how would you recommend we talk as CCLers to Sunrise Movement members about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act?
That's a big question. I don't know if I have like the specific go-to answer on that. Just how do we speak specifically to young people about the carbon tax and dividend issue? Well, it seems like the sampling that I like looked over in the program, it seems like there is good representation of young people within CCL. So maybe having those young people who are members of CCL on college campuses, maybe having them be liaisons to outreach with Sunrise people who are also on campuses. That seems like a good place to start for me. But yeah, just email us. We'll talk to you.
Same at New Consensus, actually. If folks from CCL or CCL as an organization wants to talk to that, you can always email us. We consult with lots of folks, and we love to hear what people are thinking about and solutions that they want to see, they want us to be aware of.
And you, CCL is part of U.S. Climate Action Network, actually, which is also very big within the, I know they're playing a role in the New Consensus as well, the policy engagement part.
We've gotten a number of questions and comments that just wanted to invite, for Rihanna, we wanted to invite you to read more about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act.
Thank you.
The dividends in our bill are given back to people before the fee is enacted and are given as dividends on a monthly basis.
Perfect.
I felt like we'd be disingenuous to the notes if we didn't speak for the audience on that. And I was wondering if you would, I think the audience is wondering if you'd be willing to speak any more about that bill specifically. I'm not sure how familiar you are.
Clearly, I'm not that familiar, so I will refrain from speaking to it more until I do the reading. I was a good student.
I've heard that you like reading bills.
I do like reading bills, actually. I like reading bills more than I like reading books at the moment. Don't tell anyone. So I will definitely read it, especially because we're not committed to reinventing the will. So if you all have already, there's an act out there that's talking about monthly dividends, send it my way. And I will definitely read it. Should I report back? Like, do I need to do a book report? How do I let you all know that I did it?
You might get 1,500 emails, so.
Okay, so maybe if you can consolidate the emails about this to one person and they will pass them on to
I'll email her.
But yes, and I am happy to follow up with whoever to prove that I read it. I'll tweet about it if you want. You want me to do a tweet? Just kidding. I'll say that I read it. I won't come out with a position, just so you know.
There'll be a quiz in November.
I will ace it.
It seems that the Green New Deal is something that's gotten a lot of praise and attention on the left. And as CCL, we're looking to work in a bipartisan manner. Do you have ways or suggestions on how we can frame the Green New Deal to work in a more bipartisan frame?
Yeah. I would say first, reject the premise that the Green New Deal is a partisan project. It's not. We have chosen particular approaches because we think that those approaches will both solve the problem and allow us to mitigate income inequity in ways that we cannot with other tools, and that is very difficult to do outside of something, or can be difficult to do outside of something like an economic mobilization. So we chose the things that we did, not because, and this is like a myth that we chose them because we were like, what do progressives love? How do we put it all in one? It's not how that worked. And I know, because I spent 4 months talking to experts about how do you mobilize an economy to decarbonize. So if I did all that, it did not come from a wish list, thanks. So I would say that, actually, reject the idea that it is a partisan. It is a plan to address the two crises. There's more crises, and it addresses more, but at its core, the climate crisis and income inequality, right? And it is an approach, and people can be in line with that approach, or they don't have to, but it is not partisan, just like climate change is not a partisan thing. Nature doesn't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. It doesn't. It just doesn't. You don't have to clap for that. I just said it multiple times because people seem to somehow think that, like, your political affiliation will keep you from a wildfire. It won't. So I think that that's first. I think the second is to really emphasize the economic aspects of it. So the Green New Deal isn't just a climate policy. It is a framework for how do we enter and structure our economy, the next iteration of our economy, because moving off of fossil fuels, we're talking about a change that is arguably as large as the Industrial Revolution. You're talking about changing your entire energy source. That is an economic transformation, whether you engage it as an economic transformation or not. And all we're doing is doing it openly so we can talk about how where we want power to be in our economy. You can address it just as climate. All that means is that you're leaving the economic transformation pieces to whoever has power at the moment to make choices about that for you instead of in front of you or with you, which is what we're trying to do. So I would say that. And then, so I think really emphasizing the economic aspects. And then I think the last part is, again, to bring it back to, like, this is a problem that needs all of the solutions. So if folks have a different solution or want to have a different take, that's totally fine. We welcome that. We want to have that conversation. But to point out that saying no, right, or eating hamburgers in front of the Capitol, that's not going to stop climate change. And we're just, and I, what I like to tell people is that we're at a moment where, like, children are dying of asthma. We're trying to prevent 150 million preventable deaths. We are trying to fight for the future of humanity. So if all you have to do when it comes to that is talk about hamburgers or airplane miles or yourself, you really need to take a moment and think about what it is that you actually value. So, and recognize that everyone has something to add, even if they don't agree. And I find that that tends to bring people into the conversation. I mean, until you call them depraved morally for not caring about more than their airline miles. And then it ends. But they probably didn't care anyway, so you didn't really lose much. So, yeah. That's it.
This is a question for Emily. CCL prides itself on being founded on respect and mutual conversations based on appreciation and productive conversations working towards a solution. So I think for a lot of CCL volunteers, when we see people occupying a member of Congress's office and shouting in the streets, that isn't immediately intuitive to us about why that is the tactic Sunrise is choosing. And I think if you could speak to the theory of change behind that and why Sunrise is taking those tactics, we would appreciate hearing it.
Yeah. So I think Sunrise's perspective on this is we've known about climate change for 30 years. We've known about climate change for most of the people in Sunrise before they were born, their entire lives. And from our vantage point of young people where we are now, it really feels like the momentum that we've needed to address this problem hasn't come. And that we feel like there has been failure from our leadership. And so if we as young people are going to get our leadership to really understand and internalize how scared we are and how important this issue is for our lives and for our children's lives, we need to take bold action and we need to occupy places of power. Additionally, I know that the founders of Sunrise spent a lot of time really looking at past movements in our history, looking at the civil rights movement, looking at the suffrage movement, and trying to learn from what our leaders in the past have done and the strategies that they took in order to move our country forward. And so, yeah. So that's why Sunrise engages in civil disobedience. Sunrise absolutely believes in nonviolence. But we do believe in going into places of power and making demands and letting and making sure that our leaders know how seriously we take this, and we want to make sure that they know that our lives are on the line. And if we have to engage in civil disobedience, then that's what we have to do. And also we are trying to let our leaders know that we feel that this is, and it is, an existential crisis and that our bodies are on the line. So we're going to put our bodies on the line and are willing to risk arrest in order for our leadership to really understand how serious this issue is. So yeah.
This is Emily's question, so I just wanted to bring up that I noticed in the question it said something about productive conversation. I mean, look at where we are right now. I don't know how else to define productive than, right? And so I just ask people, and this is not, again, this is actually really from a place of empathy because I struggle with these questions a lot, but to also ask ourselves when we say productive, what does that mean? When we say have productive conversations, how are we defining that? And the role of also, what does it mean to like, for a group like Sunrise, what role do they play in building political capital? Because I think a lot about, what did LBJ say to Martin Luther King when he wanted, I think, the Voting Rights Act? Make me do it. Make me get enough attention, get enough power, get enough political capital so that I can go out and do this. And that is a real role that I hope we don't sort of minimize.
I think we're right at time, but I wanted to just leave it with one. I'm sure you get asked this all the time, so I'm not going to phrase it as what makes you hopeful, but what keeps you going when you're really tired or you just want to give up?
So I'm going to keep it. I'm going to tell you the real and then the really real. The real is bills. A girl got bills to pay, and this is a job. So whenever I'm like, I just, you know, take a peek at my Verizon bill, and I'm like, you got to go. You got to go. That rent has to be paid. But then I think what keeps me going beyond that is, I've said this before, I'm not a particularly hopeful person, and I have spent my whole life feeling really bad about that. Because especially Obama era, where everyone's so full of hope, and I was like, not because of him, he's lovely, but that's just like my general response to a lot of things. And I didn't know if that would ever come in handy until this moment in my life, which is, I don't need hope to move. And I think that if we only work for things that we think we will see in our lifetimes, you will work for very little. And I think that if you only ever bet on winners, you will win, usually not what you want. And I think that's everyone's impulse, though. You want to bet on sure bets, and you want to see it. But I think that we're just at a point where we are really talking about millions of people dying because we, I don't know, want it to not have to change our lives. And I, so that is what keeps me going. And it's bleak, but the fact is that everything that we do can stand in the way of someone dying. And that's enough. Even if I don't ever meet that person, if I am not around to see what happens, I am responsible for the people around me and the people who come after me. And I will not disrespect them or disrespect the people who came before me by not moving.
Climate change is like the scariest thing out there, right? Like, it is just the vision of climate change that the IPCC lays out and what the scientists are telling us for what we can expect for the year 2100 are so dismal. And what gives me hope is, like, I don't know, like, I, for the last like 5 years, I feel like I've been like at 1,000% of caring about this while everyone else was at -5% of caring about climate change. And until I joined Sunrise, like I just felt like I was mostly alone. And then all of a sudden I just found this group. And then I was like, oh, there are other people that care about this as much as me. Like we can put all of our energy together and we can make change. And that has like really given me personally so much hope. I also just like cannot believe how incredible some of the leadership we're seeing is from like people that are younger than me. Like it's funny, like I'm 25 and I feel old in Sunrise. Like I feel like I'm old. But some of these like 15, 16 year olds, some of these like kids that are speaking with such clarity and are speaking to our leaders without fear, it just blows my mind. And I'm so inspired by them. Like Greta Thunberg, lady is a, she is changing the world. Her voice and her rhetoric and her words are starting an international movement. Like there's no other way to put it. And I just am, just feel like in awe of the way that I've seen these people that are younger than me, just rising up and reaching, this crisis is calling for us to do so much, and I see in this the youth like they are rising to meet that challenge, and I just find it endlessly inspiring. And I also think that the only way we're gonna solve climate change is to not get bogged down in the gloom and doom, and to fight and to cut through it with seeing every seeing every bad, horrible thing that could come from climate change is an opportunity to change, to solve that problem, and to make people's lives better. And that's how we're going to get through this crisis, because if we just sit and like marinate in how horrible the world is going to be, we're not going to get anywhere, and we have to be thinking of solutions and absolutely centering them on making people's lives better.
Yeah, and I'll say I totally agree, and the last that brought to mind something for me, which, are there children in the room? No? All right. Who gives a fuck if you lose? Right? Like, who cares? There's so much fear about, well, what if we lose this fight? So what? At least you didn't allow apocalypse to come and not do anything.
Like, I've heard the refrain before. It's like, oh, what if you, like, tried to make the world a better place and it didn't work out? It's like, well, at least you tried. Like, I don't know.
Thank you both so much for coming to speak with us. We all admire both of your work. You're a celebrity.